for September the 9th. This is our regular regularly scheduled roundtable discussion. This is audio recorded, and this is a nice opportunity for us to have just what it implies, a discussion for us moving forward with certain items. So we'll get started. Ms. Jimenez?
Yes, I actually wanted to talk about the legislative priorities. They are on the agenda for tonight, and we discussed them before Representative Mayfield put forth the bill relative to Common Core. And it made me kind of go back and revise our language on accountability with flexibility. And I was concerned that the way the language is presented, we don't really talk about the issue. And I just wonder, when we're asking the legislature to extend the current deadline to July 2017, are we talking about extending the deadline for testing? Is that what we're saying for it just doesn't seem clear to me, because there would be serious implications if the testing is pushed to 2017. What tool is going to be used to assess kids? And we've already started using the Common Core. So I find that we need a little clarity, because there's a change in the sentiment, and it's going to the legislative level. So our platform should reflect a stance on that issue.
Did she get a companion bill for that?
No, this is in reaction to last year's legislation that we have, and we have all this testing that we have to do regardless of whether Common Core standards stay in effect. They have been adopted. It's not that they will be adopted. They have been adopted. So the legislation says that we have to assess all students, and currently we're using different assessments. We've got FCAT, we've got, and of course, exams, and we have no test in place for Common Core. It was going to be PARC. It's not PARC. That hasn't been established. So that's what this is in response to, is that they extend that deadline out because PARC hasn't been completed or adopted by Florida.
And in the meanwhile, what is the recommendation, that they continue using FCAT?
Well, the legislation will be a repeal and replace. So repeal and replace FCAT. So right now, until they've adopted a new test, FCAT stays in place.
Status quo.
Yes.
And so will they be ready with an FCAT during that time to be given to students? So that means that even though they're looking to this new PARC or whatever they decide to use, I would think that if they're thinking that this testing is going to be implemented in 2014, they're not going to be working on any FCAT, because it's no longer going to exist. But if it's going to be extended to 2017, then there has to be FCAT produced. That's kind of you can extend it, but what is going to be used then to evaluate and assess reading, math, and science for the ones that we actually have assessed?
Well, until PARC was completed, it was always going to stay FCAT until PARC was completed. And PARC was supposed to be ready for next year's testing, not this year's. So they still have a full year to decide whether they're going to go to PARC, go to SAT and ACT, or stay where they are, or a fourth option, which we don't know about. But this is saying, don't make the decision for 14-15, make the decision for 17. Because whatever they choose to do, there still needs to be professional development and all of the work that goes into school district shifting those into that other lane.
So it sounds like this is just really addressing the testing piece. And
that's all it's addressing.
And what I'd like to ask the board is that we don't, because this is these are the legislative priorities that include the state legislature, I think it would behoove us to have some kind of statement around some of these bills that are going to be coming up. That, for example, I find it interesting, you know, Representative Mayfield puts forth this bill, and she doesn't even consult with the stakeholders and the board members that are part of the district that she serves, which is her prerogative, as it is in all cases with elected officials. But I think it would be to our disadvantage not to have a position on this, because it is, people are going to be lobbying for this, and our voice is not going to be heard. We're just going to be quiet in the background and let the legislature do this without hearing from the board members of Indian River County about where we stand on this. I mean, if that's what the board wants to do, I think that that's the board corporate board, prerogative, but I think it would be to our disadvantage.
Well, lack of a published written statement does not mean that we are not weighing in on it and taking a position on it. I'm not interested in putting it on a position statement. One of the things that does is it doesn't allow us to be open to any new information that comes up. Once you take a position statement, then to change direction, you have to take it back and publish a new position statement. So I'm not interested in publishing a position statement on Common Core. I have not been silent on it. I've been very active correcting the misstatements that have been made and to help people understand what some of the issues are. And I don't understand, I don't know the motivation behind all the different groups, but I know each group has a different kind of a motivation. And I think it's a mistake for a nonpartisan board to get into a partisan struggle. And that's what this is a partisan struggle.
I don't see it as a partisan struggle for the board to openly say, we as a board support Common Core implementation, and we recommend that the testing and the funding issues be addressed by the legislature so that we are, in effect, prepared to evaluate students. That is not partisan, and that is something that, helps the community understand that their school board supports the Common Core standards, but has concerns about the funding, the testing, and the technology aspects of it. And it would also help clarify that misunderstanding that they all get thrown in together. And I think that, that is kind of like it is the responsible thing to do, because we really...
Yeah, I wouldn't be part of anything like that. I don't think it's all.
So you're not interested in making a change in that respect to
right.
this particular platform
yeah.
that they're addressing today?
Right.
Okay. Right. And I agree wholeheartedly that this is not a position we wish to be taking. So.
Is that because we as a board don't support Common Core standards?
We have not taken a stand on Common Core standards one way or the other. If you'd like to agenda that at some point, you're always welcome to put something on the agenda. It's always been very clear.
I'm like the superintendent. I know when it's a losing battle, so I'll bring it up for discussion, but I'm not going to put it in on an agenda.
Well, I don't know what else you want. That you brought it to the table.
I wanted to hear what you guys had to say, and I've heard and I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that was not a partisan or to be construed as a partisan statement on my part.
Yeah, I probably should have
said
a political
said
statement
yes.
rather than partisan, because both parties have taken
yes.
both sides of the argument, but it is very politically charged. And there are different motivators on both sides. And I don't think very many of them are actually about life education. I think a lot of them are more about power. And it's just a battle that I don't want to get into. The statement in here does say, accurate, fair, equitable, and funded measurement of student assessment, educator accountability, and technology. So we have addressed all of the issues that are within that argument, but we've already got Common Core. If it were up for adoption, it might be more appropriate to take a position, but it is already adopted by the state of Florida. And it's important that we as board members understand the issues and speak accurately to them. For instance, we've had many of community members say, we are doing Common Core because we wanted the race to the top money, when you don't have to adopt Common Core in order to be participating in race to the top. And it's a statement that gets made over and over again, and it's inaccurate. So we do need to know the issues, but it's just like Sunshine State standards. We don't have to necessarily agree with all the standards to support the state's mandate to use them.
I think it implies that we are for the Common Core. That is our standard, but we're asking them to delay the assessment of the Common Core. So
I'm getting at is that there's conversation about repealing Common Core, and it's going to the state level. And I thought that if we were advocating for education, and we were advocating for children, we would want a voice at that level saying that we are using Common Core and we believe that this is best for our students, and we would like to not for it not to be repealed. But, you know, and I understand that there's a lot of politics, but I'm not looking at it from a political perspective. I'm looking at it from the best interest of our kids. If we have Common Core now, this year we're using Common Core, it would be a travesty for the legislature to all of a sudden, because of political pressure, repeal it, like has been done in some states. And I would want to have had my voice at the table as an elected official representing my community, saying that I support the Common Core standards. And that's not about politics, that's not about anything else than being realistic about what we want for our children. And that was all, you know, I was getting at, but I understand the board's, you know, corporate's decision to lay low on any public statements, and I'm happy to move forward. I just, because we've never had the conversation, you know, I wanted to have it, and this is the easiest one because it's not live, it's not in front of anyone, and it's just audio. And that's about, you know, as good as it gets to have an honest conversation.
And you did contact Representative Mayfield and let her know your feelings.
I will be doing that, actually. I have a letter in draft that I will
send. Okay, I was going to say, because that is exactly what you need to do, and then you need to do it with a follow-up hard copy or whatever. So if you're already on your way to letting her know your feelings.
Definitely.
And that's why I asked the question that I did about a companion bill, was my understanding that she was not successful in getting a companion bill, with the expectation of a companion bill, that was not something that was successful so far. But you never know. You never know. Okay.
I do know Senator Thrasher made a very, very clear statement that he did not agree with people that were opposing Common Core. So, where he goes, usually you see that party goes. So, see what happens.
And I will say that the summit was not anti-Common Core at all. That was not the
even though there was representation.
Yes, but that's not.
And it was fair and balanced. It was
exactly, but that was not an outcome.
No,
the summit at all.
There was no change of direction.
No, but interestingly, the governor wasn't there, but he met privately with Jeb Bush, who is, you know, has his own agenda. So that, you know, that's great. The summit did X, but the governor wasn't there.
Well, Pam Stewart is his voice for education. I think she did a good job of putting money a summit where she heard from all parties, and the parties were very clear that they did not want to change course, those in education. So hopefully they'll go in that direction.
Okay, Ms. Disney.
Well, that was what I brought for today's roundtable was the legislative priorities, and I just wanted to see if there was anything that needed clarifying or editing or another response. Now,
I think we did that in our session.
Well, Ms. Jimenez was here, everybody said 3 weeks to look at it and go through this or something. So if there's any questions now, I've answered them. That's all I have.
Okay, well, Mr. McCain, do you have anything?
Well, at the request of Mr. McCain,
what?
I knew he wanted me to put on their meeting protocols. So that's what I was going to talk about.
Sounds just like
the weekend dryer.
Let's talk about protocols.
And first of all, let me thank Ms. DeGresta very much. I appreciate the fact that she was willing to spend a little bit of email time with me on this. And this actually started at the the requirement for meeting setup procedures. I just really like protocols. They're good. Hey, it's me. I appreciate the work that you helped me with on this very much. There are two parts to this. The first thing, the second page is a resolution which eventually will need to be adopted.
But on the fourth page is something that already, thanks to lots of discussion, and actually Ms. Disney, which last time she was chairman, making certain that this was put to writing and working with Ms. Stang, and between the two of them we did something that was very understandable. And it always seemed to be whatever the board decided was going to do, they were going to do with a particular meeting prior to our discussions, then that's when it was televised, or that's when it was just, there was nothing really that we had established, and also made it easier for Ms. Stang or others to set up the room, whether and who was responsible for taking minutes and those kinds of things. And I think that between Ms. Disney and Ms. Stang and previous discussions, I think that what they came up with was excellent. And I really don't see anything wrong with keeping it meeting as far as meeting procedures. So I just have to work that And probably we should start on page 4 first if we could. It is just a draft because there are a couple of changes. And the handwriting is Ms. DeGrasse is not mine. She was at the other end of the phone when we were talking, so I appreciated her keeping notes. I think actually I was en route somewhere or whatever. Several things, and one was under discussion. It sounded with what was there, such as the round table and informal with cities and county, that needs to be expanded, and I think it needs to be things such as, and I appreciate the suggestion, advisory, civic, and intergovernmental. So I think that is something we may want to consider putting on there. And the other thing is something that we talked about, ironically, I think a week ago when we talked about town halls and having town halls, I believe, Ms. Jimenez brought that up, Ms. DeCresta, if you would, since you have the expertise on sunshine, and these were two things that we discussed, would you please talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely, yes, ma'am. Anytime a school board wishes to call a town hall meeting, we have to follow sunshine law requirements. And while you may be aware of situations where an individual board member or a council member or county commissioner has held a meeting to hear from constituents, I was interpreting this document to be when the board meets or the board calls a meeting. So if that's the situation we're under, if the board is calling a town hall either to hear in general from the public or to hear about a specific topic, we do have to follow the couple of requirements under Sunshine Law, which is we have to have an agenda. It can be very general in nature, since we don't know specifically what the public wishes to say or talk about. And we do have to have somebody take minutes. And again, that can be general. You don't have to take verbatim down what everybody says in the audience as they're speaking. So we do have to follow those, you know, very basic requirements of Sunshine Law. So if the board is calling a town hall, then we follow these requirements. But if it's some other way to call a town hall meeting, then we might be able to revise those requirements. So that's why my handwritten notes are on there, just to tweak the chart a little bit, so that we don't have an issue.
So we need to probably have some discussion, since we've had this meeting's protocols. I'm looking at anybody who...
What is this? Is this a discussion?
This is discussion.
Well, it clearly says seating square tables. These are clearly rectangles.
I saw that too.
And on a workshop, can three-sided? Can't we have like a pentagon some days? Things like that? Does it have to be three-sided?
Well, of course.
These are clearly not square tables.
Concept.
These are clearly not square tables. That's all I'm saying. We are in violation of this procedure slash protocol.
And in the future, it will be a square table.
Great.
Do we have square tables?
We made a pentagon one time.
I want like an octagon one day.
I really liked it. Because we could see one another's faces.
And I forget why we had that. We had a big group here.
Well, we had an open rectangle for the screen, and we realized we weren't using the screen, so we just closed the ring.
We can't use these tables, though. These are clearly not square.
Really good.
Clearly. Could we make them into a square?
If I have a saw, I'll go get my circular saw, I can make them square.
It's squarer than it is now. And I can sit right there, because my legs are short, and I don't have to worry about that.
Just saying. Right?
Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to talk about the procedures we have had in place? And And I apologize. I didn't ask you, Ms. Stang, if there was anything, but I figured by now you would have mentioned that if there had been something over the amount of time. So, Ms. Disney, I know that you were instrumental in this. What was your question?
Well, town hall was added after I did the
chart.
And I'm curious if we should add a box for town hall that's called by the district, because then it's only needing notice if two or more board members attend, correct? But it's still not in it because it's sunshine, right?
Well, that's not a board meeting.
Uh-huh.
And if I could back up a little bit, the only reason why I did this, other than Mrs. Johnson asked me to, is when you adopted the new school board policies, the process that you just completed, under your newer rules regarding your board meetings, there's a specific provision that says that you'll adopt by resolution the procedures you wish to follow in your school board meetings. And we define that as being workshops and discussion sessions and all the different times when the board meets. So this is just for you guys. Okay. Take Dr. Adams out of it.
Okay.
Separate and apart from that, if you wish to set forth procedures for superintendent called meetings, if she needs to go out and hear, you know, from the real estate association or from the tax association or, you know, from the general public, that's a separate.
Okay, so we're not going to put it on here.
Mm-mm.
But if it did happen.
If it did happen.
She wants to hear how they feel about everybody wearing all white to school. Then if two or more of us go, we need to notify.
It would need, right. She would need to know ahead of time.
And what about minutes? Because I know we have to have minutes in our other district meetings, like calendar committee.
I am assuming that some sort of minutes would be taken, but since it would not be a sunshine law meeting under 286.011,
okay.
It's not a legal sunshine law requirement to have minutes.
Okay,
so you're saying that if the board, for example, when we have those budget meetings, those meetings at town halls where we...
Yes.
That's called by the district. So for that, you just have to notice if two or more members are attending that town hall. But we, as a board, have really never called a town hall. So I'm just asking. I don't think we ever have. So this is just in case it were ever to happen. Like, I mean, there's a harvest.
Well, yes and no. I thought originally our original discussion when we had the budget meetings, that was generated by the board.
Well, by our direction, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's our meeting, right? It's like we could say, Dr. Adams, go hear from the public.
Yeah, but we were going to be there to hear what the public had to say regarding the budget. That's why we had the town hall meeting. Not the district to hear what it was there, but for us to hear what was being said. That's our meeting.
Yeah, that was them.
It was. Yes, it was.
Right. If that's the scenario, the board wishes to hear from the public, then it should follow the standard procedures for a public meeting. But if it's just simply for the superintendent to go and present the budget or any piece of information,
but then the superintendent is in charge of the agenda, not the board.
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
Okay. All right. And another scenario.
Go for it.
This board member says, I want to hear from the public,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the board says we don't want to hear. So I ask the district if I use this room and I set it up, that gets noticed and minutes.
That is not a board meeting. That is one board member hearing from whoever it is that shows up to speak, just like you would schedule something in a conference room or in your own office.
So any
That does not require formal sunshine law, and if any other board member shows up, I will personally come and get them and drag them out of the room.
Well,
and
our former board, the board prior to 2006, the South County High School was an issue. Two board members set up South County meetings at Highlands Elementary. Dr. McGarvey and Ms. Quimby, they set up South County meetings on that issue.
Okay.
The place had to be open for them. They also set up one in town, and I don't know where that one was. I went to the one at Highlands on the South County High School. And those were, that took staff time. Mm-hmm. That was two board members.
Right, two.
Not three. That was two board members.
But I still think if two board members are present, you still have to follow Sunshine Law and publish the meeting, be sure that minutes are kept.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Two board members present.
There was no one else there. No one else there.
Another what if?
But that was another board in another time, and we had established protocols that no longer allow. So, yeah. What's your next scenario?
My next scenario is Claudia and I are both serving on the board of directors for FSBA, and frequently we talk about hot topics. So we've been really good about not both of us standing up in the same meeting and voicing an opinion, but
yes.
Should we just do a public notice when we're traveling? That way that don't get ourselves in hot water?
I think there would be a couple of ways to address that. Number one, if board members find themselves on the same committee or working with the same statewide group, to be very careful about not expressing their personal opinions in the room with each other, so that essentially you're having a meeting without a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to this room at a meeting and discuss those opinions. We have to be careful about noticing a school board meeting outside the confines of Indian River County, because you are a local board. You're not a statewide board. You're a local board. What the law tells us is, unless there's some exceptional circumstance, you have to meet in your county, in the geographic area where you have jurisdiction. So we have to be very careful about noticing a meeting, you know, in Gainesville or Tallahassee or here or there.
Okay.
But what I would suggest is, if you feel that an issue might come up and you want to be completely transparent about it, to notice the fact that you're attending a statewide meeting in Tampa, and that two or more board members may be present, but any discussion will be held, you know, here at this room during a meeting, but that you'll be present at a statewide meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens, you know, two or more board members, it's going to happen over the years.
I think Ms. Disney's specific question was, she, as a member of that committee, to voice her opinion, and for Ms. Jimenez, as a member of that committee, to voice her opinion, that's why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to voice their opinion. They're there to bring to the table. And I say, though, they are there. That's why you have a 12-member committee or an 18-member committee or whatever. They're there to do that.
A question for clarification. Is it the individual opinion of Mrs. Disney, or is it the position of the Indian River School Board that she's been sent to deliver?
Well, in the case of federal advocacy,
mm-hmm.
Claudia is vice chair, and I, as a member of the executive board, am a member of all those committees. So we have open, rich discussion about things like legislation, whether it belongs on a platform or not. And so it sounds like in that conversation, I'm going to need to just be quiet.
And from that example, I'm going to suggest that one board member not participate in that discussion. Sit, observe, and if there's discussion needed, to come back here and have it amongst the board members.
This is an important point. This came
yeah,
up the way it did.
Okay. Thank you.
I just a little technical question. When you look at your discussion items, the round table is listed as a discussion. If the round table is a discussion, to keep things simple, can't we just call these meetings discussions, and it's discussions with amongst board members, with advisory committees, the civic, and the intergovernment? Yeah, because I think it makes it seem like the round table is something different, and a round table is just a synonym for discussion. So why confound it with a different name, if you will?
Well, I think it's because this is an established committee that meets on a regular basis. The roundtable discussion, in this case, I don't think is interchangeable, because, no, it is not a square table and it is not a round table, Mr. McCain, but it is. So the roundtable is capital R for roundtable, because that is something we have established as a regular monthly meeting.
So why don't we pull it out to avoid confusion? We have a workshop, we have a round table, which is very specific, and then we also have discussions. Because I think lately we've been having a lot of discussions and naming them such, and that's been confusing to the public. And so, if the roundtable is a discussion...
I kind of see where you're going with that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And I think that where we have advisory, civic, intergovernmental, which is the board also, a board discussion, and then that covers a multitude of venues. And roundtable also now, with Dr. Adams, belongs in a roundtable.
Well, that's true.
So it could...
So you want it to be board rather than roundtable.
Yeah.
That way we don't have to do another separate board.
Just say board.
Advisory, civic, and intergovernmental. Does that address this in a different way? What you were talking about, Ms. Jimenez?
So that means we won't be using the language of roundtable.
That's right. Just board discussion.
So what is this monthly meeting going to be called?
Board discussion.
Board discussion.
I know Matt is just so excited that we brought this up.
He loves it. He loves it.
Possibly Karen Ulas.
We're so glad we made your day, Matt.
It's not possible.
But I will tell you, when an angry citizen comes in because they thought it was this kind of discussions and that kind of workshop, and they drove 50 miles in the snow to get here, it matters.
In the storm.
And I think just like we talked about earlier when we were talking about the superintendent's goals, it's because we're in a different place than we used to be that we don't realize that if you don't have those things, you really do yourself a disservice. And ours evolved because of where we were, and some of this discussion evolves because of where we are, and that's not so bad. It's not so bad. So let's go back to, if everybody's comfortable with that, we'll move off of that. And let's go back to the school board resolution. On number two, I did suggest that because when Ms. Disney and I got on the board and we reviewed the policies at the time that hadn't been reviewed in I don't know how many years it was. Ms. Disney, it's been a long time. It used most of those policies said periodically. So there was no accountability or expectations. So under number two, I put just review. Review doesn't mean you have to take any action whatsoever. Review school board shall annually review its meeting protocols and make such revisions as it deems appropriate. And I would say that it would be appropriate to do that as soon as possible following your organizational meeting.
The first information.
The first, yes. I would think that would be appropriate. We don't need to put that in there, but I do think annually because, and if you have a board that's been together for a while, you don't have to do it. All you have to do is look at it and say, did this work or didn't that work? But you don't have to really take any formal action. It just says that it will be reviewed. Would anybody like to see it stay period? And that was a good choice of words to see the rest of it. Okay.
Does this resolution get us into hot water if we ever do something that's outside of this protocol?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
The board adopts and the board can change at will. It's just a process for you to have a procedure in place so that really it's for staff, so that staff knows what you expect in this room and what you expect as far as technology recording stuff.
Yes.
But if you guys walk in and say, take away the microphones, turn that off, you know.
And it also gives the superintendent an opportunity to say, well, I don't want to go to a workshop with this. I need to have some kind of a discussion. It also gives us the opportunity, if we hear from a group in the public, for one of the board members to be able to say, we need to have a discussion with, whatever, the term group or whatever.
Just for my information, how often are the board meetings being replayed?
Don't look at me.
Yeah. Well, there was a point where they were looped.
Yeah.
There was a point whenever you turned it on, there wasn't any.
Yes, there was.
I'll have to find out.
If I had company, they wanted to watch.
Is there a request?
But if we have other business that's being conducted, such as a workshop, mm-hmm. I do think it's important that they be in that. There's a lot of good information that comes from that. So,
yeah.
So I think we need to
televise,
televise as much as we can. So. And lately,
our meetings and workshops.
Because there's a lot that gets done in workshops, and unless people have access to them, they think that we walk in, you present an agenda, we vote on it, we walk out. Where if we insert those workshops in, they get them to understand what the process is. With the board's approval, the superintendent's approval, I think we need to have this resolution on our next board agenda. I think it's an easy one to do. Because it's a resolution, it would be a voice vote, so it would need to be an action item.
Yeah, that Miss Fang.
Okay. Missy Minutes.
Yes, I have a question that I wanted to bring up. And I know some folks, when Ms. Johnson was in Gifford, some of this question was asked. And there was some folks brought concerns about when there is a violation of the code of conduct or the law by a student in one of our sites, that they were concerned that there was no requirement for the notification of the parent of that individual student. And so what I did was to say I'm going to look at the code of conduct, and I went to the code of conduct, and then of course I went to our newly adopted policy, and I found a discrepancy, and I think that discrepancy in our code of conduct exacerbates that concern, because in the code of conduct it says that when it comes to school resource officers / law enforcement, that the SROs are not required to document parent contact prior to interviewing a student or suspect. Yet when you go to our policy, in the policy it says attempts to notify parents regarding investigation of child abuse / neglect and other law enforcement investigations, which would be the ones that SROs could be a part of, shall be documented. So in our policies, it says that there is documentation which would make those parents feel comfortable that we are trying to contact them. But in our code of conduct, which is what they are looking at, it says that they are not required to do that. So I don't know.
Well, what I heard you say was two different things.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the SRO is not required to contact. An SRO does not respond on their own behalf. They are there at the direction of the school administration.
Mm-hmm.
So school administration is the one that would be contacting parents, not the SRO. You know, it's not the SRO's responsibility necessarily to do that. So I think what I heard you read the first one, it said the SRO. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. So, like I said, the SRO is responding on behalf of the principal, the assistant principal, or somebody at their direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so the school then would be the party responsible for contacting the parent.
Okay. And then there's the ongoing concern about the parent presence. And that just is because we have the in loco parentis. And so they don't, the school district at that time, they are in place of the parent.
They are.
So if they can't reach them for whatever reason,
yes,
they need, they're able to move forward.
Yes.
And that's federal law. That's not something that is negotiable.
If I could bring up one other thing, and I don't know whether it's related to this, but it is important. Just recently was an incident, and law enforcement was involved, but the issue was somebody else coming in on behalf of the student, okay? And so I just would want our public and our parents to be clear that nobody else from the public can come in on behalf of that, speak on to the school administration on behalf of that student unless the parent has given permission and it's documented. Because we just recently had that, but it was involving law enforcement too, so while we're talking about that, you might be aware of that situation. But I do want to be sure that if another family member or relative wants to come in and intervene on behalf of that student, that permission is required by the parent or the guardian.
Do you have a question?
Sorry, I moved my pen.
Yeah.
Just Disney.
No, I basically looked up that and said I heard the first statement say that law enforcement officer did not have to document.
Right.
But the school
official
does. And yeah. So that's the way I interpreted it.
Okay. All right. Let's go back.
Nothing else with these?
Mr. McCain. Well, actually, my second item was going to be what Ms. Jimenez just brought up, because I had promised the group that I was going to speak to that issue as far as the requirement that a parent be present before we allow law enforcement to question a student, and that's not the case, but. The reason why I went to that group meeting was as chairman, and that happens to be me. I went as chairman because that's the appropriate protocols. I'll use that as many times as possible during this meeting because I know you love it. But I found it very interesting because I went to answer some of their concerns that they had during the county's Gifford Community Plan meeting, and they asked if I would come and talk to them. I did give feedback to Dr. Adams as to what else was discussed, but I did comment on where we are with some of the issues they had. Some of them dealt with the FIPER program. I will tell you that the majority of the discussion was just two people who really had the majority of the discussion, and one was the parent who said that she was notified and that she was going to be there, and she said when she got there 45 minutes later, her child had already been interrogated. So, for whatever reason, it was 45 minutes later. I don't know what the resource officer or the school administration's intent was, but I do know that she said she was very upset that he had been interrogated. And there were, as so often happens, there were many accusations that were there brought forward that our resource officers, some of whom are African American, but our resource officers are targeting young black men in the schools. I have no response to that because I don't know whether that's the case or not. I mean, those things were there. There were several other things. And one of the things that I said when I first got up to speak to them was that I was asked exactly what I was told. I was asked to respond to their concerns that they shared, part of that seven different components of the Gifford Community Plan, including infrastructure and other things. And I said, this was one of the first things I said, was I said I was a little surprised that they didn't speak to the Gifford Middle School pickup, which is unimaginable in the afternoons for that particular school, and it is part of. And I think we have that already on our horoscope. I mean, not our horoscope, but on our periscope as to what we see is some of the things that are our horoscope one or two. But it's what we see is something that needs to be addressed eventually. And unfortunately, I guess there were people who just didn't hear anything but the fact that Mrs. Johnson's only concern and for the district was the parent pickup, and I spent maybe less than a minute making that statement. But there were a lot of questions that I said needed to be discussed with the sheriff. There were many things that came up. One thing that did come up was the statistical numbers that the district uses regarding some of the concerns regarding African-American students who were incarcerated. And I said I was fairly sure that they were district numbers, that they were not Florida numbers or national numbers that were being used. That we don't use someone else's numbers. We always try and use our own numbers when we're making reports. And then the last issue, which I have to tell you, I still haven't gotten the names of the two teachers yet, and that's I will inquire one more time. But there was a challenge to the moonshot moment, and it was very cynical. Talked about there was a blanket statement made at the beginning that was that it was offensive, that they were offended. The person who made the statement said they were, it doesn't matter who made the statement, they were offended because on the front of the brochure for the Learning Alliance was a picture of a black boy, and they felt as though we were not recognizing, nor were they recognizing, that white students had problems. It's not just black students, African American students. So anyway, that person continued and said, I'd like to know some numbers. I'd like to know just one student. Tell me how many numbers. How many students have been helped with all of this time that we're spending and all of these videos with the stars going off and all? I mean, it was a very negative statement. It was couched thusly. And I said, well, you know, I can't tell you any numbers. And I think most of you all know Mary McKinney, who's retired from the school district. And she's still very active. She's a retiree. But Mary McKinney was sitting with two other ladies who are actually teachers in our school district. And when I said, I can't really give you numbers, one of the teachers, both young teachers, young African-American teachers, and one of them said, well, I can tell you right now. I was trained, and she just started in on all the benefits of the Learning Alliance and how much it has helped, and the other teacher did the same thing. And Mary McKinney, who usually feeds other people information, she spoke up and said, and I have been trained to assist in the program, and she said, and it's great. She said, our students are benefiting from this. So the person who was, who was kind of speaking somewhat off the cuff, I think, just for an assumption on their part, they were pretty much shut down completely by the responses of people who were on the front lines. And I did, as I said, because I was there representing the district and the board as far as answers as much as possible, I did tell Dr. Adams the very next day about the interview and what the comments were and what the concerns were. And we have been responsive to the County Commission's planning department request for the planning information they wanted. We've given that. And then we did have, what's the thing that was last Thursday, Dr. Adams?
Give progressively asked for some information on, right, on vocational
education.
So we had our adult education.
So I did a follow-up the very next day and made certain that we had people in place, because I knew I wasn't going to be in town last Thursday. We made certain that we had people who had the facts and figures, who had the information, who dealt with it. And I want to thank Dr. Adams for being so responsive to that. I think that I think it was wonderful, because the way it worked out, we had two teachers who were there to speak to the moonshot moment, and two teachers and a retiree who work with the Learning Alliance. And I didn't have to answer anything, because people who are actually doing the work and who are benefiting from the fact that these were opportunities that those two teachers said we wouldn't have, because there's no way we could have afforded to do that type of training. And they were right on the issue. So I went a little bit on the other side of what you brought up, but that was my second item for today. So, but it was good. It was very good.
That is exactly how they explain in Orange County how their school for community members works. Is you train enough people with this kind of information that when something is said in the public, they're able to clear it up right away, give the correct information, so that you don't have the spread of these stories that aren't accurate. It's exactly how it's supposed to work.
It is how it works. Like I say, I didn't have to do anything, and I think that there were a lot of people who were informed more by hearing part of their community speak to the issues, not me.
Mm-hmm.
Not me speak to the issues. But things I could not answer, I did bring back to Dr.
And I wanted to follow up with the two people that went, because facts are facts. I think that's what they did, you know,
right.
And so those that went to talk about career and technical were Christine Burr from Sebastian River High School, because they were interested in knowing what programs our students have available to them. And then Christy, I can't think of her last name, from Adult Education went and told about the programs that were in the community. And one of the comments that Ruth said she got back from them was they were very surprised about all of the programs that we had at our high schools that were available to students. So it was good to have those people that are actually working on those programs to be able to go in and talk about them. And like you said, whether it's me, not you, but those people that are really in the...
And they're the experts.
You know,
they are the real
the facts. Yeah, they really are.
And I did want to share from that group that I got an email who said, we had an excellent career and technical education session tonight, and two of your key people were outstanding, and Kristen Burr and... Christy Shields. Such tremendous representatives of the school district, caring professionals, you can feel really proud of them. And I'm thinking of sharing that tonight because, you know, this is what we're
Please
about.
Do. Please
you
do.
Know, so I, it was nice to see that they also recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had the career technical people make a video from each of the high schools at some point not too long ago. That's the kind of stuff that needs to be relayed over and over on that channel, right in front of a meeting or behind a meeting, because that's a common misperception that can be cleared up with information.
On the channel last year, there was a lot on the career technical as well as the adult education. There were some videos ongoing, but we need to periodically keep that going. So.
Yeah, that's a journey. That's not a destination. Mm-hmm. That's a journey. We need to keep that. Mm-hmm. We can't say, well, we did that. We need to keep doing that.
Right.
Okay. Ms. Menes.
Yeah, I just had a couple of follow-ups at the last board meeting when we approved the different virtual school contracts. Mm-hmm. We talked about getting data for the middle school and high school, which we haven't received. And then at one of our policy meetings, we had a question come up, and I think Chairman Johnson gave direction for follow-up on charter expulsions. We have a policy that says that those have to come before us, and there was supposed to be follow-up on that.
Yes, and I did find out that they are not. I recently went to, had asked, this is Dr. Torres Martinez.
Right.
And they have not been. Okay, so the next step for them is to put it on an agenda for the charter, you know, they meet monthly. The other thing is I do have data on the virtual programs. I'm going to work with Mrs. Bennett, put that together for me.
So we'll be getting that.
And then another follow-up is the schedule for your leadership group that we mentioned this morning.
Yes,
if you could get a copy
I will do that. Thank you for reminding me that, because I actually have it.
Okay. All right. Board committee reports.
I have one question before we go to that.
Sure.
Just a question. Do we have any resolution on dual enrollment?
Yes, we're going to bring something. We are ready to bring something to the board. I've worked with Okeechobee and St. Lucie and Martin. And they are willing to do some cost sharing. Our cost share for this year would be about $90,000. And we've written some other things in there in terms of a student would have, they've acknowledged that a student would have to pay the second time around. That's going to be part of our procedures too. But we tried to get more because it is very costly, and we were looking, but they actually have that dollar amount in our agreement. So we have finalized that Dr. Icano sent the last draft to us Friday, so that will be on the 24th meeting.
That's actually, I think, pretty good news. And do you have any numbers on enrollment?
Actually, the enrollment, I don't know what it is, but what I did ask is, did it go down? And the answer is no. I mean, this is not really a valid time to expect that that would change, because everything was already in the works for this fall. So I think that's something that we'll watch over time. My expectation is that we'll go down some, because we're not going to be having students taking courses over and over again. We are going to stick to that 3.0. You know, those parameters that have really been established, we're going to make sure we're adhering to those. We're not going to, a student can take it, but we're not going to pay for it the second time. So we have some parameters that we're going to place. So I think we could expect that it's going to go down some. Durbridge High School is already looking at a math course to be offered on campus second semester with one of our teachers teaching it, which is no cost to us then. So, you know, we're looking at measures to further reduce our costs. So,
when that comes forward, would you mind bringing us some data on the high points?
When the agreement comes forth, you mean?
Yeah. I'm interested in knowing when we can say no to kids.
Okay.
I'm interested in knowing how many used to be repeating classes, like what that number was going to look like, you know, the reduction in the repeating classes.
I don't know.
Well, but some real high points on it.
Okay.
When students, because if a parent calls me and says, well, my student wanted to take XYZ,
sure,
and they said no, I want to be able to know what to say, why that would be the case. Instead of what they're going to hear out there is, well, they don't have money, so they're just saying no. So that's why.
Okay. And actually, we learned, Cynthia Aversa was in one or two of our meetings here, and actually, she gave us feedback on things that they're doing. I mean, they're pretty, take it and win, and you know, you just can't drop out when you want to, but you know, those type of things. So it was good to have that discussion with her too.
The charter high school is holding some very, very definite accountabilities there.
Well, and they have the same expenses we do.
They do.
You know, so they are going to actually have a separate agreement. I did talk with Dr. Icano about that, and they are charged about the same amount as us in terms of the number of kids that take it, because most of the students there are taking one or more dual enrollment courses. So this has had a great impact on them as well. So, but it's been a good collaborative effort trying to get some cost sharing and working with the college. We'd hoped that we could do better, but we did get some.
Well, I'd like to know what it is the parents are told when they agree that their student's going to take dual enrollment. I mean, do the parents, are they counseled on that? Do they understand that attendance policies are much stricter in college courses, mm-hmm. that they can actually fail for it? And, you know, it is different from our school. So I'd hate to hear a parent come back and say, well, I just found out because my student didn't pass. It's a pass-fail class. They didn't pass. Now they have to take class over again in school where I have to pay for it. I mean, those things are different than you take a class in high school and you have a grade and you can pass with a D and that doesn't work in college. So I'd be curious.
Right, some changes.
To know what the parents are told here when they sign up.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments before we move on to the committee reports?
Yeah, I just have a question. Last year we got there was an email sent where we had scheduled for the student advisory council, the parent advisory council, just to have a sense of the SLC, you know, when is it that we have the principal's meeting, so we have an idea of what's going on. Is that something that the board is interested in having a presentation about? The student advisory councils, the parent advisory councils.
That's not a problem. They're set out of your head of time.
Yeah.
The student advisory group that comes in meets on Fridays, kind of a board of the parent advisory group.
Yeah. It could go up, as far as I'm concerned, on that area of the website that we have access to where the minutes go. That would be fine with me, instead of another piece of paper.
Yeah.
reports. Mr. McCain.
I don't have anything. Nothing's going on. The August 50th didn't meet.
Gotcha. Ms. Disney.
Well, Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments met, and I was unable to go to the meeting. And I want to bring this up because I'm concerned that come November, when we don't have a fifth board member, you know, we're going to have to do all these assignments again. And we're all full of meetings, so there's really nobody available when we need an alternate. And I just need you all to know that I have to prioritize these things. And, you know, the lagoon is very important, but when I think that that's going to be the main part of the subject, I have to say, okay, you know, we're committed here to learning, to student learning, and that was something I just had to move off quickly. And if anybody else is particularly interested in going to those, I am going to have a lot of future conflicts. So I just think, you know, I just want you all to be aware, if you hear, well, she hasn't been, that it's about prioritization right now with all these meetings we're going to.
You really only have one more, October. And then we will have our organizational meeting.
Yeah, I have October and November because it's the first week.
Oh, that's right.
I'm concerned.
Thank you for the notice because we know your year is going to be, you have definite priorities for
the year. I just didn't want you to have the expectation that I'm at every one and then find out I haven't been. That's the part I'm trying to avoid here. It's going to be an ongoing issue, though, without an appointment. And I don't see an appointment any time in the near future. So they're still doing background checks and credit checks. All those candidates.
So I know at least one person who applied who he hasn't even asked to fill out his financial his credit report or his background check. He hasn't filled out a form. I thought those would go out from the governor's staff the minute somebody put in their letter of intent, but evidently not. So I suggested he call the governor's office and find out. All right, Ms. Amedes.
Yeah, I have a clarification question. I thought I would be alternate for MPO. Did I miss something on that? Does anybody know that?
Is she the alternate for MPO, Ms.?
Because I keep getting the agendas as if I were the key person, and I thought I would be alternate. But
yeah. Oh, you can go.
No.
Believe me.
So you
I somehow.
Yeah. I don't know why it says on your agenda, and I don't know if this is the one I spoke to Ms. Dang about, that I am the main person and Matt is the alternate. And I keep asking if that's accurate.
So you last year?
No. So
at the very beginning it was tax season, and
right.
So I think Claudia was going to handle some of
that. That
I
could
volunteered
be it.
To help.
Yeah, that's what it was.
But somehow I became the.
MPO is very and thank you for bringing that up because that's one of the ones that really is important for us to have representation at, even if we don't think we need representation. And again, Mr. McCain, you probably only have two meetings between now and our reorganization, our organizational meeting.
I'll make this one.
Okay. Well, if you let Ms. Stang know that she can tell them that we will not have a representative there, but when you see the minutes and the minutes say Mr. Matthew McCain, school board non-voting member, unexcused absence, that looks bad for us.
Oh, it looks bad for you? Oh, well, then I... Because if it looked bad for me, I wouldn't have cared at all.
It's bad for our district.
So. Okay, well.
So, all you have to do is call Ms. Stang and she'll take care of it for you. If you're not going to be able to attend those. Okay, I don't have any committee reports. I was going to report on our meeting at Gifford, so... I just placed on the agenda by the superintendent, Dr. Ask.
But this is the wellness policy revision. Remember, we brought it back.
And you did ask if you could, and I told
right.
you we should have plenty of time.
I appreciate that. And so really the clarification was on the committee. I mean, it did come
right.
up because it
right.
really had indicated it was. So if you look on the back page of what I gave you, it has struck most of the first sentence and says, the superintendent with a capital S, okay, which means or designate, shall appoint members of a committee who will review this policy annually, and the committee shall include representatives of the board, the administration, the food and nutrition service, and so on.
Okay.
So if you're okay with this, then I'd like to go ahead and bring it forward to the next meeting to set the public hearing.
On the 24th?
Yes.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask the question I asked at the meeting. So does this mean that it's not the wellness committee? Because in the original language, which I don't have this time, the original language, it refers specifically to the wellness committee. So are these one and the same, or are you going to be appointing another committee? Because there's an existing wellness committee, and they're the ones that have been engaged in this. And I don't understand why we don't use the language, because that's what the local practice is. In our policies, it says the wellness committee. And I know this is a NEOLA template, so they wouldn't say wellness committee, because that's not...
Yeah. I certainly don't have a problem calling it the wellness committee if it is a committee which is made up of this group, these representatives. But they are one and the same. I don't
as
see
long as
that
it's that representation.
Yes.
I don't have a problem at
is
all.
Is that
changing
the representation now?
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
I don't know who the wellness committee is.
Who's on the wellness committee? I liaison here, my alternate. That's the team that, you know, they are part of it. It's a big confusion, and I'm hoping that when we have that workshop on student services, it's clarified. We have the obesity,
That was a task force.
The wellness committee is a part of that, and they do all three things. So that it would, maybe to kind of solve this, it would behoove us to, you know, talk to the chair of that committee and understand what
who's
you guys
chair
do and what. I have no idea.
Okay.
I know, you know,
Patrick,
because it's so confusing.
It.
But it does. They don't call themselves the Wellness Committee unless something comes up with the Wellness Committee. But when you look at their minutes, it's Obesity and Diabetes Task Force.
Yeah.
So there's a confusion there, and I mean that's why I asked the question, because it doesn't seem clear, and this gives the impression that something needs to be appointed.
Okay.
Another committee needs to be appointed. So I'm just.
Okay.
Trying to make sure that we know who's
sorry,
doing
what.
So we have obesity,
that
we have wellness, and we have Shaq.
Yeah, I understand the difference between a task force and a committee, and evidently the task force originated out of the work of the committee. So let me...
But that operates
look
as
at that
a health department function, and this talks about a wellness
right
committee that is a board
that's
district
right
committee. So
it's a
they
district
can't
committee
be one and the same, because we... That task force is
got
autonomous
it
to anything we do.
Got
it. So we
yeah
gotta
thank you for that. Okay.
Yeah. That's, you know, that
so
I understood that was the ultimate for diabetes and task force, not
that
wellness.
So
it has to be fixed.
And then Shaq is a separate.
And this does not. It says and the public.
Right.
Okay. I will work on that, because what you're saying right now is they are one and the same, and that's really run by the health department. Pretty much.
I just shared with Dr. Adams a very impromptu discussion with Mr. Baird, because regarding the name of the School Health Advisory Committee, because that just the name of it implies that it is our committee, and it is not. And his comment was, well, they're not our committee. And I said, yes, they're under the health department. And he said, no. He said, I don't have any, I don't ever recall seeing anything about that committee. And I said, okay, all right. Well, we need to have our people talk to your people, because that is not for you and I, Mr. Baird, for the two of us to decide standing here. Because it was strictly an in-passing.
All-way conversation.
And I told Dr. Adams that we need to have staff discussing this. I don't need to be discussing this as a board member, because at some point there'll have to be something, either a stamp of approval, or we move forward with some defined responsibilities. But this is another indication. When you have these folks who are off doing
doing different things, and there's no knowledge of this accountability. So when we get a report, or when there's something in the paper about the school health advisory committee, the public thinks
school district committee.
Okay, I could just to that. I just quickly Googled it, and the language is the school health advisory committee check functions under Florida statute 381.0056. Every school district will form a school health advisory committee comprising of specific key people, and it, you know,
well, then that says it's every school district will fund. Every school district will.
It says every school district will form a school health advisory committee.
However, it operates out of the health department, whose budget is under the county. It is a county. The school, even though that is a state of Florida health department, the budget is within Mr. Baird's purview.
Right. No, but I'm just saying, to get clarity, maybe our legal counsel can look at the statute, because if it says every school will form,
then it becomes our committee.
And it becomes our, you know, so I think we need clarity, and hopefully at that school services workshop, that language will be looked at, so we know.
Because they are very autonomous, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be, I'm just saying that there has to be accountability somewhere for them to be having.
But they're, you know, they're not as, this board signs the school health plan every time it has to be done, and they're, by statute, they're part of the group that is tasked with developing that school health plan.
But you're saying that's ours. You're saying that's
ours. I'm just saying, you know, it seems like we need clarity.
That's what I'm saying. If we are signing it, what are we signing?
And it, I don't know. We do it every year.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what you're saying.
The school health plan. It's the school health plan.
But the school health advisory committee is what I'm saying.
It's not a health plan. It's not a health plan. That's developed by.
It's different.
Our people, but that is their recommendations to us.
But the SHAC chair signs the school health plan, as does the school board, as does
okay,
the health
well, we aren't going to solve that, obviously. So let's move forward with that. And we do need to have that as part of our discussion when it comes to student services.
Got it? Yes. I'm not so sure that because of the two wellness committees that we shouldn't say a school district committee or school district wellness committee. Do you want to define that more?
I don't want to vote on this until we're clear.
Yeah. Well, in other words, we know what we want. We want a school district wellness committee made up of these various groups, these various...
Well, once I understand the statute and if we agree on what committees, then we can write this policy, but I don't think we can... I don't think we can agree on this policy until
we don't have to at this point. We can just, yeah, I don't think we're ready for this.
But that's future workshop. That's great to have it brought up. So
I think Ms.
Okay.
I really do, Dr. Adams. I think she's brought forward an appropriate scenario that we need to probably address.
Are we talking? We're talking wellness too. We're not talking school health. We're talking wellness.
We're talking about and we need to be looking at all three of those. Is that what we were saying?
Yeah.
Obesity.
Understand that relationship.
And understand their relationship and how those things and where they and who they belong to.
And who has established those relationships? This said the superintendent shall appoint members of a committee who will review
but if
this
state
policy
statute
annually.
Says, if a state statute
have you been to that meeting? I bet you didn't appoint those folks.
So that's why I want to be clear that there's maybe a school district and there may be another group that can...
What about the obesity committee? I know you did attend that for some time.
Well, Claudia's been attending.
Oh,
they,
I'm sorry.
They have, I guess, they consider themselves the wellness committee.
Okay,
hearing, so.
We need clarification before we think.
I do have a
policy.
Question though. Is there any urgency in having this policy? You know, we have the default current policy. Is there any urgency in approving this that we should be aware of?
Not with regard to
okay.
these. I would say the urgency is getting it straight on
Right.
What is the wellness committee? Who's is this according to statute? Mm-hmm. Which
who does it belong to?
Yeah, who does it belong to? What are the responsibilities?
And well, unless you want to strike everything that has to do with the committee and pass it the way it is, mm-hmm. and then add the committee part after this is established, I could do that. But I'm
no,
not.
No, I don't see any reason to do that.
Okay. So we have direction on that. All right. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
So 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
5:01.
Okay. Nothing else to come before us. Meeting adjourned.
So, do we know who? Do we have a list of who these wellness group is? The obese and the obesity task force.
Dr. Sedwani. It's one. It's our PE teacher from Beachland.
I mean, I guess I'll go to her for the name.
Yeah,
of the
there's
people,
a,
if you guys
there's
don't
some
know.
Retired nurses.
Yeah,
it's a pretty eclectic group.
Betsy Root, diabetes.
Okay.
Counselor. But we probably do, Ms. D. Preston, we probably do need for you to do a follow-up for us on what we are statutorily responsible for.
I know Patrick is in it.
And what has some autonomy to it.